welcome to Unidentified Wargamer. Each week I interview a wargamer and identify them with a hobby. This week I've got on Dan Brewer, the amazing Dan. I've seen a few of his videos around, so it was exciting to get him on. How are you going?
Hey, good, mate. How are you?
Good. How's your week been? Pretty busy?
Yeah, pretty good. Well, not very busy, but that's good for me, so I'm pretty happy about it.
It's always nice to have a relaxing sort of week.
Yeah.
Have you had much going on the hobby table or played many games recently?
I have. I've had like a bit of a resurgence of playing from sort of very sparse and not that much to the release of the OBR book. So I have a Tomb Kings army and they're pretty much like replacements. So I actually got to play something with a bit of a different play style. Not too far from the Tomb Kings original play style, which is a resurrection army, but just got to use like some old models again, which was cool. And then, new book. And because I generally only play one army, like having my second army back again, even if it's a different rule set. I definitely gave them a bit of a run out and played a few games. So that was cool.
Yeah, I was speaking to Tristan about how Tomb Kings now sort of suits more the OBR playstyle. It feels a bit more of an actual, like a Tomb Kings army rather than something very different to the old OBR book. How do you feel about sort of the comparison between the two?
I agree with him. The sort of the way they set it up is more in line with the Tomb Kings rules. So at the beginning of AOS, Tomb Kings had a rule set, but it's still very much in line with AOS 1. Like if you read it now, the thing which I find interesting with that is I actually think it's aged quite well, which is I think if it was still legal, I think you could still catch some people off guard with some of the things in there.
Yeah, he was telling me all about the buddy re-rolling and the sixes were sixes to hit, but they weren't unmodified. So there's a few sneaky things there.
You could make them explode in like fours and it was like flying like more than halfway across the board. I guess definitely think they're designed as like a slow army with a resurrection mechanic. And the thing that OBR has done is it's given them like a decent base save. The whole difference between the two undead armies in the beginning with fantasy was Tomb Kings had very light armor only, very few heavy armored units. Those vampire counts had like access to, you know, better armor saves, if you like. But that's sort of the main thing that I would say is different is your armor save and then the save stacking in the current meta. Tomb Kings never had a good armor save. So I'd say that's the biggest difference. But very similar otherwise. But the way they've redesigned the book to very much move as a shell, the Bone Shaper tends to be the general all the time. It's almost taking the role of like the Hierophant from the Lich Priest. And if he dies, your whole army starts to crumble. If he dies, your resurrection's gone for the most part. So it's
there's a top tip for people trying to struggle against OBR: kill the Bone Shaper.
Yeah, that's a very easy thing to do.
Yeah, and it is now.
I think most OBR armies' grand strats are going to be him survive the game, because if he survives the game's probably gone well. If he doesn't, you've lost anyway.
Yeah. And you're enjoying the new OBR book then?
Yeah, I've enjoyed it. It got me playing again, and then I went back and played some games in Westhaven. So, and I still prefer playing with them just because they're a little bit more nuanced, a few more different tricks. The first couple of games, it was like learning a new playstyle. So I've always had a lot of movement-based. I've always played fast armies and always been very deliberate with movement. And I think that's sort of how I used to win a lot of my games, especially sort of AOS 1, AOS 2. Because even Tomb Kings, the thing that most people would fly across the first turn would be like the big snake unit. I'm sure you've heard of that. I think it's a bit before your time.
But, I think I've seen it, though. I've not like seen it on the table, but I've seen pictures of it and everything else.
Yeah, so what I would do is just get a unit of 5 skeleton horsemen, which are terrible, but they can run and charge. They don't do any damage. And I would just fly them like 30 inches and just charge into the corner of a unit. If they couldn't do 10 damage just from that corner of the unit, I would just lock them in combat. So for their first turn, their best unit just has to either retreat or hit them. So that's how I used to fight them. I'm quite willing to take my time. And even comparable to that would be the Lochan with Fangor. I never did that. I never thought it was good. I always thought it was better to, I mean, obviously some people have had good success with that, but I always preferred to hold them back, move them normally with a bit of a unit. So I was never in a rush to alpha someone with them. So...
And if people aren't aware, Dan is a master molder, or master Skaven player. He's back probably maybe, 3 or 4 years ago, you done a lot of content more based around Skaven and the shenanigans and movement and things you could do with them all.
Yeah, a lot of that stuff's gone from the game now. So yeah. AOS 3 just majorly nerfed my playstyle. But I've still got a few of them. I still think you can do a lot with retreat and charge. But yeah, It's a different rule set these days.
So I know you were sort of more involved with the game maybe 2018, 2019. Did you sort of step away over the COVID years? Is that what happened?
No, so moving from another country. So I'm from the UK. I moved here 2015, tail end of 2015. And then it was just a way of meeting people outside of a work environment. So I've met people that I would never meet under any other circumstances, even the way we're talking now. Like, what other circumstances are going to run into you? And even the guys in
Yes.
Queensland. I
Yeah.
was in Queensland last week when you messaged me, and I hung out with Corey. Like, I was staying with Chris Welfare. Like, I was never going to meet them under any other circumstances, really. And playing, initially going to events and things like that, I was never considered myself a tournament player. It was just like a reason to go see somewhere I'd never seen before. So like, I went to Canberra for CanCon, the first one. I'd never been to Canberra before. I had no reason to go there, but I got to see something. I went to BrizCon afterwards. Really just got like little pockets of the country where I've just traveled a lot. And I think as I got more established and I got used to being here, like a friendship circle set up, maybe not as much pressing need to go to these different places. So I think I got a little bit burnt out, and then Skaven for the longest time didn't have a book, and Tomb Kings got squatted. So
Yep.
even though I kept playing with them and I enjoyed playing with them, I was getting a bit burnt out. And then their book actually came out, and I was like, well, now I need to use it. And yeah, I just think other overlapping priorities came up. So it wasn't really like a COVID thing, because I spent most of COVID playing Blood Bowl 2 online. So
Yeah,
like,
okay.
which is the first game I played before AOS. So yeah, I played Blood Bowl way longer than Sigma. So it's like I don't know, just strategic thinking games, stuff like that. And so yeah, I don't
So
know.
did you play? So you played Blood Bowl in the UK then, and then came over and picked up AOS here?
Yeah, so I had Fantasy when I was like 12, 13. So I had a friend who had the Empire Orcs box in Sigfid, and another friend who had a Lizardmen army. So like, my mate and his dad had it, and then I just went to the store with them to pick something up. Like, I saw them playing, I was like, that's really cool. And the day that I went in there just happened to be the day the Tomb King book got released, like the very first
Oh,
iteration.
okay.
So I just walked in, that was on the new thing. I saw Kalida, and I'd recently watched The Mummy Returns, so I just bought it. And so that's sort of how I started, but we didn't really play much because I don't think Fantasy really Fantasy didn't scale well. Like, if you play less than 2,000 points, and a 2,000 point Fantasy army is probably like 5,000 points of Sigma. I don't know if you ever played it, but like, I didn't
I
either
don't
because
play
it didn't
fantasy,
scale
no.
well. So I had it and I painted some of it. I rarely played it because it didn't scale down well. So we played Blood Bowl a lot because I used to go to like a local store, just like a local Games Workshop before they made the one man store thing. And they had, I think, 3 4x4s and a 2x4. And we'd just go in there every Sunday because you could put Blood Bowl in a 2x4 because the board used to be smaller. We just played Blood Bowl a lot. So I would pretty much play it every Sunday, like almost every Sunday for a couple of years. And it's a hard game to learn, but when you're used to it and there's people around you playing all the time, we just did that because there wasn't enough space. So kind of stopped that when I was like finishing school. Didn't really touch a Warhammer game again until I moved here. But I remember the Blood Bowl 2 video game coming out, and I bought that and I played that a little bit here and there. So I had this big hiatus until I moved here. I ended up getting back into it. But I wouldn't say that I played Fantasy much before. I really predominantly played Blood Bowl when I used to play. And when Blood Bowl got relaunched, I picked that up again, but it didn't really change much. So
Yeah, that's fair. And what was your draw to Tomb Kings and Skaven then? Were they both at the same time, or did you get Tomb Kings up later on and then get into Skaven, or what's the story behind both of them?
well, genuinely, the Tomb Kings. I was 13. It was The Mummy Returns. That's the whole reason I bought that
Okay.
army. I
Yep.
like the aesthetic as well, like the Egyptian aesthetic. I'd always been drawn to that. And I like Kalida in particular, like the Arrow of the Ask army. I always like archers for some reason. So I'm surprised. If I'd walked in a different day, I probably would have bought a High Elf army. The Wood Elves weren't out yet. Skaven came a little bit later when I think I just came across. I started playing Blood Bowl, Skaven and Blood Bowl. And then we played Mordheim a little bit as well. And like, the Nightrunner box now that's still out now is the original Mordheim Skaven box. It's terrible. It's awful. But I liked the idea of assassins. I liked the idea of hidden units. And then I read that book and how they played and sort of the high risk, high reward, how funny they were. And like, I just thought they had the best sense of humor. I know a lot of people gravitate towards goblins for that. like all the Moon Clan stuff now, but I was just never drawn to that. I just thought they were funny. I liked how they could blow themselves up. Or like even that the infiltrators, that the gutter runners used to have a rule where they got stuck underground and didn't show up called "I told you we should have turned left." Like just thinking
Yep.
that's yeah, I just thought it was funny. Or like the one of the few games I did play was like my mate's Lizardman army. He had 2,000 points. I had 1,000 points of Skaven, which now would be more than 6,000 because of how many models you need to
Wow,
do that
okay.
with my mate's Empire, which is 1,000 points. So he had like his cannons at the back, and I had the Warp Lightning cannon. If it misfired, you'd roll a scatter dice, and that's what it shot, and it just shot through all of his artillery and killed them all, and we lost. But I just thought that was funny. So
Yep.
just the rattling gun, like if you misfired that, you would roll a scatter dice, and that's the direction it shoots. You can shoot into combat, killer, and slaves. Like I just thought the way they played, even though I didn't play that much, was quite funny, and some of the units were quite funny. So yeah, I think it was the sense of humor and also the over the top play style and like how everything could kill itself, and also the always like magic and the Greyseers now are pretty like low key standard wizard, but they were one of the best wizards in the game in fantasy. Like they were the Greyseer and the Screaming Bell was a big target that could do a lot of damage and would sort of be the biggest threat in your army to a point. So yeah, I just like them. So maybe a couple of years later and playing them in Blood Bowl, and they were fast and they were funny, and you could lead units from the back. So you could put characters in your units. Not too dissimilar to what's sort of happening now with 40K, where they join the unit. I'm not
Okay.
overly familiar with the 10th rules, but from what I've seen, you can put your characters in units. But you could put them at the back. So rather than then standing at the front line and center, they can just stand at the very back and then just leave. So,
Yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
Or the current rule that old where they could sort of flee out of combat, the lead from behind, I think it was still called
Yeah.
the AOS2 book.
Yeah, the scurry away or something.
That's the one. Yeah,
Yeah.
that's the one.
Yeah, I just thought it was fitting. Well, I think even one of the characters, Tretch Craventeer, was like, "Stay here, I'll get help," and he just abandons the unit. Yeah, I just like the art style as well. It was quite unique as well. It's not really like if you watch like any sort of fantasy like setting. Like Lord of the Rings, World of Warcraft, and stuff like that. You'd generally see like a lot of crossover, and I just thought there wasn't really anything quite like that. Like Skaven, they seem pretty unique.
Yeah, they do. They seem a bit different. They're definitely their unique IP-ness rather than something they've pulled from somewhere else. That I'm
Yes.
aware of anyway, until something comes out that they stole it from some random IP.
They probably did, but if the IP they stole it from, it doesn't sound very popular. So,
No.
yeah, they've
Do you enjoy how they play on the table now in terms of, are you a person that enjoys the big casino dice rolls and the take massive damage or high risk, high reward rolls? Is that a play style you enjoy with Skaven? Or are you more on the reliable side of the Skaven armies?
I think they're severely reliable, and I think you can build them to be severely reliable. I've never really invested that much on the high risk, high reward playstyle in any setting, really. OBR, I have a little bit more because I don't tend to use Catacross because it doesn't line up with the models that I have. I could, but I've always been super fixated on knowing what you can expect from a unit. And when something's variability is that swingy, it becomes hard to predict what it can do. The things that I generally take are pretty reliable and consistent. So.
I remember you used to be a big fan of the retreat with the clan rats. Was that your big thing with the retreat and charge style?
Yeah, they made that harder now because of the change in
Yeah.
unit coherency. So I can't just string them up in a giant line in front of my army anymore. But I've been thinking of doing that again for the new edition of just take two big units of 40. And it's just that, yeah.
Harder, I suppose, not being able to then put in a run roll to increase their movement away. It's now just their base movement, so you can get locked in
That
a
does
lot
hurt.
easier.
Yeah, well, the things that I used to do with that is I actually preferred when people come to me. I think if you build a Skaven army well and someone alphas you and just brings everything in front of you, like their worst opponents are ones that stand back and take you out. Like Lumineth is a bad matchup for Skaven, in my opinion. But if something's going to come straight at me, I can run rings around them without needing that extra run roll. Like a few games I've played going back a couple of years now, but I tend to use what I would tend to do is charge something weak with clan rats and then try and surround another good unit so it can't break coherency, just so it can't move at all. So just surround it in a clan rat 2 and 2.9 or 2.5 inches away, plus less than 3, so it's still in combat, but just to a point where it can't move at all. So no one's attacking anything. So and that is hard enough purely because there's more things in the game that can wipe out a unit just in one round of combat. So someone can delete 40 wounds pretty consistently across many books at the minute. So I think that's kind of what changed that as opposed to the movement. But
Yeah,
generally,
well, going back to your last point as well, like we saw that at the Masters with Kieran. Kieran lost to Dave against the Lumineth because he sort of Kieran had to make all the choices and had to make all the roles and stuff, where Dave just sort of sat there and shot away at him.
yes.
And then you see all his other matchups, and they want to come into your face and beat you up, like especially like the Slaves of Darkness with all the Varengard. It's like, I'm gonna come across the table and try and beat you up as much as possible, as early as possible, which really works well with the Skaven army.
I saw that game. I very rarely watch stream, but like the way he set his army up is sort of the other way to play it, banking on 3 claw steps ahead. Like I never built for that because again, it is high risk, high reward. You can get it. If you get it, it's great, but there'll be that time where it doesn't. And then when you're playing across multiple games, that will happen. Same with like the Warbringer, like you buff everything into that, but you come across an army that's good at shutting down magic. It's not going to do what it's meant to do. And,
Same with the 9 Storm Fiend build against magic again. You're
yeah,
relying on that
same.
7.
You're relying on it and then it's hard to cast and that build can work and it clearly it did because he got to the final. But I remember watching that and I think he chose to forego a battle tactic to try and make a more ambitious charge. I remember typing in the chat like, I think I would just lose the battle tactic and take the easy charge because you never know. And then he didn't make it. I was like, I even remember writing is like that could be a mistake because you're now backing on something that's statistically less probable. That yeah, you'll lose a battle tactic. You're going to be in a stronger position, which is obviously easy for someone else to say who's not playing.
Yeah,
But
hindsight. If it had worked the other way, you would
it's
have looked like
genius.
the
But I remember writing that before he made the roll, and then I think I just commented, not like I told you so, but I was like, yeah, that was always what was the risk was it was going to happen, and then getting roasted for it. In like the chats by other people, like, what do you know? And I'm just like, I'm very good at escaping. I know lots of things. I didn't know it was me, but like, it's,
Yeah,
yeah. But
that's fair.
if he got it would have been great. So I do think they have that play style too, where, like if you get the high roll and 3 claw steps ahead, you can do a lot of damage, especially offensively. I've just never built for that because I like to know what something's going to do and I like to know it can do it every game. So, I mean, as a whole, I think the Warbringer is pretty good, but I've never ran it. Not recently, anyway. So, Death Frenzy is hard to cast. And so, for the
And
palace
so
there.
you spoke a lot about tactics and play styles and stuff like that. Is your main draw to the hobby, or has been the main draw of the hobby, been the like competitive and gaming, or do you enjoy the other aspects as well?
It genuinely started as something to fill my time when I knew no one in the country. That wasn't watching TV. So like I bought a few things just for something to do on a weekend when maybe one of the handful of people I knew I'd see on a Saturday, that meant Sunday I had nothing. And I just felt like I was wasting my time like watching TV or like, all right, I've already been to the gym. I'm home now. It's 11 a.m. What am I going to do the rest of the day? And then met people, went to a few events and then did better than I anticipated. So it was never I was never competitive minded. I never thought we just played a lot. We played a lot like our sort of group initially, like when AOS won the points first came out. And so it was a smaller scene, but we played a lot. And I just started to rack up consistent results, but I never set out to win a tournament or expected to win a tournament or be competitive minded. But I think I benefited from playing the same army. The first few games I played the Skaven did not go well. Like it's there was a reason why no one else was using them and they didn't have a book, they had the person's book, but it wasn't good. And before points were released. So no, I wouldn't say that. I mean I think it kept it interesting, like when they do a rules update, like okay, I can try this thing out now, this unit's in, that unit's out, like spicing it up a little bit. But I would never say that I went out to play competitively, but I had played Blood Bowl before, which I don't know if you've played it, but that's a very mentally stimulating game where you're constantly having to read what's going on and it's very sophisticated and a lot of depth. But no, really, it was just like a painting thing. It was something to do to kill time to a point. which then I ended up meeting people, making friends. So I kept doing it. And like I said, traveling the country. And so that's sort of what it was. I just found that a lot of people, I looked at the game a little bit different. I looked at it as a point scoring game because I was used to Blood Bowl where I would try and outscore someone before my team died. So I was used to the concept of getting ahead on points and getting the shit kicked out of my team, for lack of a better term. So like that wasn't a, I knew that you could win without having to have the hardest punch. It was like there were other ways to score. So I don't think I consciously thought that, but I think I applied that, and I think it served me well. But it was never something that I was doing on purpose. Like the first CanCon I went to, I was expecting to get smashed by everyone I played. And the first game I played, I did get smashed, but tabled, completely wiped out, annihilated by the guy that went on to come first, and I ended up coming second. But I didn't think that was going to happen. So, like, it started exactly as I thought it was going to go, which is I got my teeth kicked in. So I thought all five games were going to go like that. Didn't.
And had you been to a tournament with your Blood Bowl beforehand, or was your first tournament experience involved being AOS?
iOS is the first one. I've been to a Blood Bowl tournament since too, but no, it was just Sigma.
And how did you find your first tournament experience? Was it quite nerve-wracking, or are you a pretty sort of confident person in putting yourself into new environments?
I didn't find it nerve-wracking in the slightest. Not A, because I wasn't taking it seriously. B, I wasn't expecting to do well. And C, I wasn't attached to the outcome. I didn't care. So I was competing in judo, like a martial arts. And if I mess up in judo, I can get like slammed and someone can really hurt you, or they break your, like, you can really get hurt and injured. So this little game I was playing with miniatures really didn't hold a lot of weight.
Yeah,
So
there's no
even
risk there.
not quite the same, and no one cares. Like if you go up to someone afterwards, but this happened in my game, they're like, oh yeah, sure. Like, well, that was the other thing I was doing to occupy my time. And I got injured a few times as well. And so the risk factor, like I could see pretty early that that was how some people got that competitive drive. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I'm not saying one's better or worse than the other, but I was like, oh, this is like a thing I can do to challenge myself, which doesn't involve me getting my ass kicked if I fuck up. Like, so,
Yeah.
yeah, pretty much. So.
And what would you say, because you said you weren't expecting to do really well at a tournament, but you end up like having quite a few high placings. What do you think was the result that led to that point?
I just kept coming second. Like, I
Okay.
don't know why. Like, I was never winning. But like, I think I got put in the, not until the book came out, because I think that gave them a punch enough to cross them over that line. But I was winning by other means. There's a lot of people I played that if I played them a second time, they could see what I was going to do. I
Okay.
think they would beat me in the rematch. So I think people would look at my list saying, what are you doing with this? Never played this, never seen it. They're playing me and I just try and run around them as much as possible. Like, okay, now I can see what you're doing. I'm too far ahead on points. It's too late. If I played them again immediately after and they knew what was coming, I think they'd probably smash me more often than not. So I think I got a lot of people by surprise. And then when I started playing people who had played consistently, who knew what I was going to do, more mixed results. So it was, I think I was consistent, but I also knew where the limits of my army were. I wouldn't say there was one particular experience. Like, I got to first in the AOS rankings by coming second a lot. So I wasn't winning. So.
You got your first at one point.
Yeah, I did, but it wasn't, I think I got, when, before Skaven got a book, they released, sort of like a carry on just to tie you over for a few army allegiances. When that's when Clan Scryer got like their own allegiance abilities. It was like a 2.5K tournament, and there was one formation in there, not the pop-up Storm Queen, but another one that 2.5K I knew could just annihilate anything. And it did. So I'd already won one event with that. And, that was like a 16 player event where everyone there was good, knew what they were doing, experienced. All five games were hard. That was actually probably the hardest tournament I've ever played, even though I say I won it. But it, when you go to a bigger event, you start getting, you get two people who are really good, matched up right away, and then they play down into someone else who could also actually have had a really strong first matchup and played down as well. So you can get sort of these really good players sinking into the third round sometimes, and just stomping someone who's lost two games is quite new. You can also, to a point, miss some of them until the later rounds. So it can be a big luck of the draw when you get bigger ones. But when you've got a small event like Masters, like everyone there knows what they're doing. There's no, you might have a favorable matchup, but there's no easy matchups, I would say. So whilst, who you get paired against, because there is a bit of a rock, paper, scissors system to the game more now than ever, in my opinion, where it's like I can deal with this army or I can't. Like, I don't think that was quite as true a little bit
Well, I
further
think
back.
the way the game seems to play these days, it seems to be a lot more books at the top end, where back in AOS 2, it seemed to be one or two armies seemed to really define the meta and everyone else was lagging behind a bit.
Yeah, different points, definitely. The Flesh Eater Court book when that first came out was amazing.
Yeah, like Flesh Eater Courts, and then you had Slaanesh and like sometimes Stormcast, and it was all sort of all over the place. But it didn't seem to be a multitude of armies, it just sort of seemed to be a few at the very top.
Yeah, no,
How
definitely.
did you find, because I know you said you like you used to score bigger early on and then sort of peter out towards the end. How did you find that sort of play style applied from second to third? Because I know it was a completely different way of scoring. How did you find your results went after that?
I didn't play as much thirds, so I'll make that clear. I haven't played anywhere near as much. I do think the battle tactics affect that a lot more because some books have really easy battle tactics and some have really hard ones. The Skaven ones, for example, are terrible. The OBR ones, there's two really easy achievable ones. So, and those are the only ones I can really comment on. But then when it comes down to what season are we in the Galician Champion season, the Veteran season, are we monsters, what are we playing? So I do think that impacts point scoring a lot more because you can get ahead in battle tactics. It's like the massive example we spoke about. It's like, should you forego the battle tactic to make this a little bit easier? That becomes more of a topic of conversation because now you're at the point where actually I might be better off giving up a couple of points to chase them later. Whilst, before I think you used to have to hold every objective to score max. You don't need to do that anymore. So hold one, hold two, hold more, which is the sort of the format in 40K. It's like, well, actually, I can ignore that objective the entire game. I don't have to go and get it. Whilst I don't think that was true as much before. I think it's a little bit harder to pull ahead now.
As someone that said they didn't play much of AOS 3, how did you find you went with your with because you came up to teams to Runax? How did you go at Runax?
I won all five games at Runex, but I do think the team system played a big part of that, in that there's a
Okay.
couple of because you are trying to tailor matchups. Because I had the highest strength of schedule at an event. If we put all of those players in one singles tournament, there's no way I was winning the event. So, I had the highest points, but I think I had, my last game, for example, was against Iron Jaws, and that's just like tailor made because they have to come at me. So I even spoke it out with the guy afterwards. I was like, if you were more reserved and just sort of stood back, you would have forced me to come to you. And you actually had more objectives than me. The fact that you charged at me was exactly what I wanted. It's kind of my only way to win. So, but like, if you're playing orcs and you're going to stand back, it's not like,
Yeah, that's not what orcs
yeah,
do.
no, not really. You play something different. But, I think the fact that it was a tournament format helped. And again, I still think there's a few things that was different to the typical Skaven list. I didn't have Skateboard Fangor, for example. So I actually still to this day prefer the combat build, not the Warfighters. I wouldn't take the Warfighters. And again, it's reliability because that's going to be consistent in every matchup you play. Plus, if I play Giants, those Warfighters are useless. Or if I play
Yes,
like
they
a.
are.
Yeah, so there's a
Yep.
lot of matchups where they just don't do anything. Whilst I think the combat build is just always good. It might not be that excessive over the top, but like Skaven don't struggle with hordes. I've got other things in my army that can deal with hordes. So I found that again, I'm not bringing what people typically play. I actually played a mirror matchup, which I don't often get to do, which is I played another Skaven army, which is very much that Deceiver, Warbringer, more offensive, high risk, high reward army. And I think I tabled it in turn two. Like I just knew what it was gonna do. But just banked on a, like the Rat Ogres coming out of Morhold, like banked on a lot of high rolls early on and just while I had Fangor, he didn't, so I could shut down his magic pretty well and then just didn't get a 9-inch charge and no reroll because Rat Ogres don't have access to that and unless you've got a hero nearby and some poor placement at the back. Because I really like the Underwoods Warband with Slink. So I got to his Master Mordor and Gracia really quickly by coming out of his Norhal. So, and even then when we were playing that, I used the formation that made your guys count as free, not the one where you have extra damage. So I was just putting Clan Rats and Gutter Runners on objectives to score numbers. So Yeah, so the little bits I played, like you can get ahead, and I did well at the teams, but I also think there was a couple of armies I could have gone into that would have smashed me. So, Teclis.
Teclis, known rat smasher.
Yeah, I think it's a tough battle. I played Lumineth not too long after that in that lengthways setup where you have to move even further across the board. And it was against the Archer army, and they just shot me. Nothing I could do, very little. Exact same army I bought to team, but I just lost some random game at like my local badly. So, yeah.
And have you enjoyed the transition from second to third, and then also from the old Skaven book to the new Skaven book? Out of those two transitions, do you enjoy both of them, or?
I do. I think the current one is very much a tie of a book. So, like, they've just updated it to the AOS 3 rule set without
Yes,
really
that's what I've
changing what
heard.
things do that much. I do think there's a couple of things in there that did get a lot better, and gutter runners are probably the big one for me, which I use, which I don't think are as common among other Skaven players, but I've always liked the Ishin stuff. But I like the rules that's AOS 3. I think it's a better designed rule set. It is, I do like battle tactics, and I like things that make people think rather than just, okay, if you buy the best thing and you just run. I actually wish the battle tactics were a little bit more tailored that you have to build for them. So like I saw Corey last week, Papiniemi, I think I'm saying that right.
Yes, that's very similar.
Like he put Furies in his list just to like, what's my round one battle tactic going to be? So he's built for that and he's planned for it. I actually like that in terms of game design that you're thinking about battle tactics and then tailoring what you're doing for battle tactics, because you can still build and buy something strong. That won't guarantee you a win. I've never liked that, the idea of someone buying the best thing and then it auto playing itself to a victory. That does exist in the game and it always has, but I like how battle tactics leave less room for that. You still can get something that's powerful enough just to walk over someone and then score points later, but I do think I like the design of AOS 3 in that the execution. So like the battle tactics in the book. Being a little bit mixed. Some find them really hard, some find them really achievable. And then just how well do your book battle tactics apply to whatever the current round is? So now we've got a magic round. It's like, well, does your book battle tactic make up for that, or are you just sort of screwed until the next one comes out? Like, I think that's the flaw in AOS 3. So it's sort of rotating system over what units to use, but I do think it keeps it fresh.
And I think the main thing that I'd issue with is like you start with Doors of Cain where they got the extra point for a battle tactic. And
Yeah,
it's
they
just
nerfed
like
that. Yeah.
that was where the slippery slope started, and then all these books started coming out where a lot of them were like kill a unit. And you already had that as a generic battle tactic, so then you've just got two plain battle tactics there, one from your book, one from the GHB. So you always know no matter what the GHB changes, you've always got that easy of just kill a unit battle tactic. And there wasn't anything you needed to build in towards. You don't need a specific unit, you didn't need to do anything specific. It was something you were already doing in the game.
Yes.
Whereas I think some books have some really nice ones where you have to build into them. Or you've got to play a certain way to really get them to work. And you can't do, say, your book has four battle tactics. You can't do all four with just one style of army. You sort of got to lean into it each different way.
Yep, I agree with that completely. I think they should update them when they update the GHB, because they did that with, and I'm not someone who plays a lot of 40k, but I know they did this. So they had the secondaries in 40k 9th edition. Every time they'd update their equivalent of the General's Handbook, they would also update the secondaries. So I think they could and should, but haven't, update the battle tactics so that when this book's going to last us for 12 months, revising the battle tactics to help balance the game. I think that's something they can do to help balance the game. They've decided not to, and I think that's a conscious choice they've made because they did do it for their other big game system. But you could, and they did FAQ that extra point from Daughters of Cain, I believe. But I do think you could amend them. So like, if you've got those order ones, you could buff and nerf them respectively. Or if you've got a battle tactic, it's just not going to happen. Or grand strats and things like that. So I do think they could play with that a little bit more of updating them when they update the handbook. I think that would be something they could do without having to completely. I guess you would be rewriting parts of the game, but without having to just shift something's points up and down. Well, that changed the
Is
world.
it, I suppose it's another change they could do with the 6-month battle scroll update, where they could play with these battle tactics that everyone completes every single game because they take it turn 2 or turn 3. And the tsunami always gets it. You could always add in a keyword, or maybe, I know the point doesn't work the best, but maybe make it worth 1 point or do something to change it up. So it's not just a always taken battle tactic that book has, like, it's a gimme. It's just a gimme to get always
Or
done.
just spread the gimmies out. So if you're looking at when you're looking at data, because they're looking at like 45 to 55% win ratios. If you're looking at those armies that are winning 55% of the games, like are they, it's always two from the book and three from the thing. But then you look at this other army that's sitting at 48. They never use any of their books. That should tell you like we need to adjust. But it's a variable they could play with. Is so I think they could also bring some wins up. Like Skaven, I never use any of them. Like the Grand Strats had survived the game. They're terrible at that. So it's I think they could mess with them a little bit more and buff some of the bad ones to just make it so that maybe one or two from every army is achievable. Or even just one. So
I think maybe touching there might be a smart point, because you're then not adjusting points or adjusting war scrolls, where you're actually playing with people's models that they had the complaint, oh, I've just built this or I've just painted this, and now it's useless because it's been pointed out or it's been changed how it works. You're adjusting something that's sort of a secondary part of the book, not a mainstay of the war scrolls that are attached to models.
yes, and then it's a choice of do I want to get this battle tactic or do I want to keep this unit? And like, I just
Yes,
think,
yep.
yeah, I think it's just another variable they can play with without making this stuff completely redundant when a new edition comes out. But I also think they're quite happy to do that. So it's like, yeah, who knows? But sometimes I think that's a good thing. I think the way that I look at the meta now, is probably a little bit different. So GW has always had like a rolling meta of like power creep, sometimes power surge, where everything just boosts up that much more. But if you think about it, if you release something at the beginning of AOS 3 and it's still strong and it's still winning events by the end of it, when it's not even had an update, that's probably a flaw. So it's you do have to roll it and change it, but I wish the gap wasn't as severe as it is. It's probably how I'd look at it. Like I would like something not to be winning every event after a couple of years, but I wouldn't like it to not even be taken to the event after a couple of years. That's, yeah.
Well, you look at the strength of what Iron Jaws used to be when it first came out. Everyone had two big Maw Crushers and they rolled over everyone. And then you give it a year or two, and now the only
No.
thing that's really taken is Big War, and that's like really niche cases.
You don't really see it. So yeah, that's sort of why I just wish they'd tone it in a little bit more. Like don't make anything that good and don't make anything that bad, but spice it up enough that you don't have the same three armies podiuming for like 2 years in a row.
Which I think was sort of more, I definitely saw it more in AOS 2 than I think AOS 3. But it's more of that rolling power creep, as you said before, that is happening more, I think, with AOS 3, which each new couple of books, it's just ramped it up that much more, where the previous books now can't really compete.
Yep. So I think, yeah, I'd agree with you on that from what I've seen. I think there was still a way to win a little bit easier in the old rule set. And I think a lot of that was around the movement mechanics and the scoring. Because, like I said before, you can hold one, hold two, hold more. It's very different than hold all four objectives. So you, like OBR, they don't like spreading out, but they don't need to. And the current rule set enables them not to. You know, they would have been forced to before.
And how are you finding the difference from playing Skaven, that sort of sat maybe middle of the pack since the book released, to something that's got a bit more strength and resilience to OBR?
At first, well, I did have to learn a couple of lessons with that too, which is that first couple of times I played, I did spread out and then learn not to do that. So, I still enjoy playing Skaven more, but it was nice to use something else and do something else and kind of get it out of my system and have a reason to sort of play a little bit more with something that even then I wasn't using an optimal OBR army. I could field something. I was using Arcan, not Kallacross. And I do think Kallacross is almost what you need to do because it's the army's only access to a hit buff. So other than all out attack, which I'm having to do and I'm having to choose which unit to use it on, if you've got Catacross, that applies to your whole army. So it can then use the CP to do something else. But I do find the restrictive movement is probably what makes them less enjoyable for me. Like I still like them, they're still fun to play, but moving in a bubble slowly and methodically, Whilst when I played my Tomb Kings, I would still fly units off and spread across the board a lot more.
Yeah, because
So,
you do love your shenanigans with movement.
yeah, so it feels more restrictive, but yeah, pretty much.
And so, in terms of your army, are you using a lot of Tomb King models, or have you bought more the actual OBR models itself?
I'm only using Tomb King models. I actually
Okay.
don't really like the OBR models. I mean, they're well designed, they're just not my taste, but it was like a reason to pull my old stuff out of the cabinet. It
And
wasn't
have
a
you pretty much then just sort of pulled them off the square bases and put them in circles, or have you done your own conversion work to them?
mix of
What's
both.
what?
So it's like I've converted some stuff that I didn't have before that don't really translate perfectly. And I've talked to Tristan as well because there's a couple of things we've both done when like we've both done the same conversion without talking about it. Like
Yep.
so I'd already converted a lot of my stuff anyway, just because like half the Tomb King range was really poor and old, and half of it was sort of had a bit of an update in 8th edition fantasy. So for the most part, I've just used what I already had. I haven't bought a single OBR model. So I've just looked at the base sizes and then seen what I've got that sort of fits, that isn't confusing who I'm playing against. So I've got 30 Mortar Guard, I've got 30 Tomb Guard on the exact same base size. So the only infantry unit in the army is pretty, transparent to who I'm playing with. So like I'm using Arcan, but I've got a giant Sphinx with wings that flies. It's sort of, yeah, it's not confusing. Maybe the way I describe it probably sounds more confusing than it is on the table. I've
I
got one
think when
unit of
they're like
cavalry.
a set up unique unit like Arcan, like you go, well, this is my flying demonic creature with a skeletal guy on top. Like I
Yes.
don't think you can really get confused with that on the table.
Yeah, so it's pretty clear cut. But then I actually, until I saw someone else playing with OBR, I forgot that they were the actual models. So I was like, oh, that's what it's supposed to look like. But no, I haven't bought a single one. I've got a bunch of old Tomb King stuff I haven't built, but a few conversion opportunities too. Like yeah, a couple of things I've done a bit different, but using all the old stuff was just a reason to use that. So yeah, don't own a single OBR model. I'm not planning on getting one either.
Do you find conversion is a thing you really enjoy, the hobby? Is that something you normally do with a lot of your armies?
Yeah, I've always done it because Skaven's the same, half the range is awful. Like, so I've
Don't
always,
tell Sam Morgan
yeah.
that.
So I was always doing it, and at the old painting metrics at events, it's a lot softer now that you get scored in conversions and freehand and things like that. I was always doing those things more because the models needed it, but they were terrible. So like, half of them are really good, which is why I like them as well, but they haven't aged well. It's like the Nightrunner box is still the box that some of the Skaven models are older than people we play.
Yeah, we all know about the Acolytes and all this sort of stuff like that from like the early 90s.
And they're the most expensive unit in the army is to buy
Yes.
the actual old metal acolytes. So I've converted my own and I'm happy with them, but more necessity, really. Same with the Tomb Kings. Half of it's great and half of it's not. So, but yeah, I never really minded that. That's not something I've ever like struggled to think of ideas with. So,
Well, I'll try and get some photos and post them along with the episode so people can have a look at your
yeah, sure. I'll
conversion
send
work for your
some to you.
Skaven and your Tomb Kings.
Yeah, cool.
Have you got a painting style you like to do your armies in then as well?
Always like to do something different every army. So, my Skaven is a lot of flesh, a lot of like rags and cloaks and things like that. And I actually like how they paint the different clans the different colors.
What is your favorite clan? Did you say it was the Eshin?
Eshin stuff, yeah. So always sort of lent towards that side of it. That's sort of how I think the reason I bought them in the first place was the Gutter Runners and the Assassins, just because I thought they were interesting.
I mean, you
But
can't get past Ninja Rats.
yeah, pretty much. But I played them in Mordheim, and I think when the few games of fantasy I did play, there was I think there was an expansion book where they gave you like if you played like a pure Eshin army, you'd get these rules, which existed in the back of the book anyway, but they updated it and it was they added units. So it was like an Eshin sorcerer, an Eshin rat ogre, like an Eshin triad, which is pretty like assassin. And they sort of paralleled Mordheim pretty well. I played that more. My Tomb Kings, because it's bone, and I'd always seen people paint them really dark, so I painted them really bright and tried to make them stand out, and like a lot of bright gems, and rather than this old rotten army, like as if all our army and thing, all the armor and sort of things like that were brand new. So I tried to paint them as sort of crisp and new looking as possible, using bright colors as opposed to dark ones. I've got a Harlequin army for 40k, which was like a painting thing in the lockdown, which is just one day I painted a solitaire. And because I'm not a 40k player, don't really know much about how it plays, but little bits like the secondary thing I was talking about earlier. But like I just wanted to do the freehand diamond thing, and
Yeah.
turns out it's really hard. So
I bet.
like I don't own an airbrush. So, and the other thing is I really hate tiny metallics. So I was like, I'm gonna wet blend and glaze all of my weapons from like dark green to bright yellow. I'm gonna freehand everything. I'm gonna do the diamonds. I'm gonna head swab everything and green stuff masks, and then freehand the mask. And then
Very
I've
ambitious.
well I've been doing that, but I've not got very fast. I've got like 700 points painted. It's probably all it's ever going to be, but I've done it. So yeah, so whatever I end up doing next, which I will do eventually, will be something completely different. So I've never used an airbrush, so that's sort of something I want to play with. I'll just do something entirely different to keep it interesting, and because I don't play a lot of armies, I'll switch between them. So when I got sort of bored of painting 80 rats, and I'll go paint some Tombkins. When I get bored of painting metallics, I'll go back to Skaven. So it's kind of kept it interesting. And then the Harlequins just made me never want to paint again. So
That is very fair.
I got some Drakari, which I use some contrast things for, but again, just to be different. But yeah, not very much. So
Have you got any other army interests outside of the Skaven and the OBR?
no. But I like the Seraphon stuff because they've just updated the models. But I also think Skaven are going to get a similar treatment soon. So from now, I'm going to finish the OBR Tomb King stuff, and then the Old World. I don't know if I'm going to play it or not, but I think Skaven will get a very similar buff at some point in the next 2 years.
Well, we've all
So
been hearing the rumors of the Skaven and Stormcast
yeah.
edition box.
I think that's got a good chance of happening, and that Pestilence Warband that I just showed looks really cool. So, yeah.
Well, it sort of makes sense why we all thought the new Skaven book was sort of a holdover and wasn't really done a whole lot. And they didn't get rid of any of the old models or put new models in because it was delayed. Well,
Pretty
not
much.
delayed, but yeah, wait 2 years and you've got a whole new release because you're getting the new edition done.
Yeah, so I feel like the OBR thing's given me stuff to do in the meantime. So I probably wouldn't grab something new, but I would play. My group's sort of talking about playing Mordheim again, so I'm kind of excited about that. And I already have it all, so I don't need to do much. But I don't know, maybe paint a Blood Bowl team or something small. Like,
If you couldn't play your two faithful armies, you'd pick Seraphon as your next one to sort of dabble with.
Oh, just because I'm sold on the Aggrodon Riders in particular, I just like them. But playstyle wise, I don't know if I would lean towards that type of army, but I'm not sure. Like, I did try and start a Zakane army once, but I painted 30 Witch Elves and I hated it. So,
We all can't be Liam.
no. Well, Liam used to use mine for ages, so he never painted his own Witch Elves. He just fielded mine
Oh.
for like 2 years, like a long time. But I'm not really sure. Like, I think it would change. So, ultimately, there's nothing that's grabbed my attention long enough to do it. So, but I've always liked elves if they, like, I do like kind of like the Tolkien Wood Elves, but I know they're never going to do that. We've sort of got Sylvaneth instead, but I don't mind Sylvaneth. I quite like them. So maybe, but I would think unlikely. If they do like the Dark Elf thing that everyone's speculating as well, probably lean towards that too.
And so you're saying your group was sort of looking at different armies. Is your group quite a competitive group? Do they sort of go for the meta armies, or what
No.
sort of gaming group do you have?
I go with like the D3 Mortal Wing guys in Sydney, and I think it's a very different player base, and that they don't care about competitive play at all, and that's why I find it a bit refreshing. So, but the people I started playing out with at the beginning, I still play
Is
with
that
now in
Clan
places.
Filth?
Yeah, it's like Liam, Matt, and Ash, and things like that. Chris as well, Welfare. So I. That's still there if I want to do that. I'll test something competitively, but like, they'll play relaxed things too. Like I play Cursed City with Matt and Ash and Ben and Liam sometimes as well, like almost every week. So we're actually always been quite happy to try different things out. But for the most part, my gaming group's super laid back. Like no one's trying to like smash anyone's face in. They just get drunk and play games.
Yeah, I was going to say, because we all know D3. If you're part of the Australian scene, the D3, it's D3 Mortal Wounds, so isn't it the whole phrase?
Yes.
Very relaxed. We're all going, we're competitive players, but more of the mindset of gonna have a ton of drinks and have fun there while still playing like a strong army, but not like a meta army seems to be the thing. Because they're all take out, maybe not take out, but they always place highly at events as well as getting completely smashed.
They seem to do better than they expect to. I don't think they would consider themselves competitive. But there's a few people in there who know what they're doing and know how to play. But I think as well, like because I got sort of labeled a tournament player very early when I wasn't trying to do that, I got this thing in my head where I'm like, oh, people might not want to play me because they're just gonna like think I'm gonna smash the like. So I've always been quite happy to play more relaxed games. Like even before, like we'd play games locally and I still play Skaven, but like, I'm going to play Pestilence and build like a full Pestilence army, which isn't that good. And I can't use most of my movement tricks, but I'd still play it. Lose, but I'd play it. But like,
Yeah, that's fair.
yeah.
And how do you find sort of being involved with more of a casual group? It's quite exciting to be outside of the competitive realm as much.
Yeah, I think I got a bit burnt out from the competitive realm because I was placing well at events. When I wasn't expecting to, I then found myself in a weird position where people were expecting me to play some other events. And so, which was strange at first. And then, like, it's going to sound really arrogant, but like my opponents knowing who I was, because I never really consumed any Age of Sigmar media. And I think the game really grew and blew up. And I don't think I really noticed until I went to CanCon 1 year and there was more than 200 people. And,
Yeah, just a little bit.
yeah, and then people are like, I really want to play you, and I'm like, I have no idea who you are. And I would never set out to be a quote unquote tournament player. I found the game stimulating if I want to test this out and try this out and try different things. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And I think that was honestly the taboo at the beginning of Age of Sigmar of, admitting that you're trying to put something together to perform, which I still think is a bit of a weird thing in the game now. But yeah, just like seeing what I could do really. And then as far as it takes me, like, I think the thing that I've got maybe credit for is because I always use the same army, regardless of where they were sitting in the middle. And a lot of my tricks went under the radar for that until I did a podcast with Robert Honest Wargamer, then just sort of went through everything that I did. And the next week, almost all of it got errated. I think so that's when I realized I had power because Games Workshop clearly listened to that podcast.
Yeah.
Now I'm a has-been, but then I was good.
It's the old Games Book intern listening to see what Rob's got to put out. And
Yeah, so
I noticed sort of more recently you picked up more of like a rules judge and TO more than a tournament gamer.
yeah, so I like being around it and I like the people and I've still met people. I like to maintain the social side of it. But it takes all the pressure off because like I said before, this became like my fun thing to do, which didn't involve me getting beaten up. Whilst and that turned into this like stressful thing where there was like expectations and then people predicting I'm gonna win before I've even played a game. Like I just didn't like that. And then and there's nothing wrong with this. Then when you do play events at a top table, it can be very intense and very sort of having to really carefully watch what everyone's doing, not just because of like cheating and things like that, but just like really zone in and pay attention. Cognitively demanding in a way that I just didn't want to deal with it. So I sort of took a step back from that. But yeah, so I think as well, like not everyone, some people are gamers, like, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I think that's something that some people were afraid to admit at sort of the start. But ironically enough, I wouldn't consider myself one of them. I think I got labeled that from other people because if I was a gamer, then like, I'm going to go buy a Tzeentch army, I'm going to go buy a Slaanesh army, I'm going to paint them to the minimum that I can. Like, just memeing the whole time, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, being more involved with looking at people's tables and being more of a rules judge, have you got any tips or anything that have come in that you've noticed people do a lot of mistakes in doing certain aspects or things that people do really well, which lead to winning games?
Deployment. I think that's the thing people mess up the most by far. Like, I do think you need to have a capable army. I don't think it's won or lost in deployment, but responding to how your opponent's setting up. Because I think the biggest misconception in the game, and I've said this before, but I think it's true, is there's a reason the game rewards you for having less drops than your opponent. And everyone assumes that's a good thing. They'll be like, oh, I've got this, it's only four drops. I was like, it's a huge disadvantage in deployment if your opponent has a long range threat. That's why you get to decide the turn. So like, if you only have four drops and I've got 12, it's a massive advantage on me. I can play around you. So like, and then if I've built something in a way, and I think this is something that some armies do better than others, is building an army that doesn't mind going first or second. So if I don't mind going first or second, and I've got three times as many drops as you, I consider that a huge advantage. And I think people don't, you know, people who have like a set way of deploying where they don't really look at what their opponent's doing, or pay attention to how they're setting up or respond, or I don't want this unit to be opposite that unit, or I definitely want this unit to be in range of that unit. If you look at all the top tier players, they'll ask about threat ranges. They'll deploy screens. They'll be like, what's the maximum distance I need to be away from you? The maximum distance you can hurt me. So like, if you've got, I don't know, this unit that can run in charge, their threat range is 25. You'll see people setting up 26 inches away. Like, I think that's the biggest common mistake people make, is not looking at what the opponent's doing at all. So what they can do to them in the first turn, what happens if they make them go first or second, building for that and, just not responding to what they're doing. Cause even if you got this 26 inch range, front range, and it hits something you don't care about, like, all right, go ahead, hit this chaff unit. And then with my unit standing behind, that's going to kill you back, which is a trade that I'd make. So, I think deployment is the biggest, just walking around and seeing some people setting up without even looking across the board. It's insane.
Or even like seeing that you're definitely going to take first, but you put your wizards in unbind range because you couldn't be bothered measuring if you were like inside or outside 30.
Yeah,
It's
it's such
just
a
a
small thing.
simple, simple counter deploy right there, and you've negated that part of the game. So now your spells can all be unbound if they've got a wizard that has an auto unbind or something else.
Yeah, and again, if you make yourself low drops, it's like, if you have a, I've maintained this forever, but I know some people really strongly agree. If you have an army that doesn't mind going first or second, you should not make yourself a one drop. You should go for as many drops as you possibly can. So then you can deploy outside of someone's unbind range, because you can leave that last. So if I've got 13 drops and you've got 10, I can deploy that 11th. Do you know what I mean? So unless you're absolutely dead set on you have to go first, which again, you're going to encounter someone else with a one drop eventually. I think you should make yourself as many drops as you possibly can, so you can deploy around them to the exact scenario you just gave, which is, say you only five drops, and like, okay, I'm going to have my auto unbind wizard in range of you. There's nothing you can do about it because I'm going to drop it fifth. You've got four drops. So, you know what I mean? So,
And do you find in your army creation and or either books, do you find you've got a must-have in terms of a type of unit in your book? Like I know you say you like you really enjoy your fast units that have a bit of a movement shenanigans. Is that like a mainstay in your army choices?
I'd say the one that I've hammered home the most isn't gutter runners, but throughout like the lifespan of the game is Scryer Acolytes. So I'll never not take them if I'm building something to be the best it can.
Is that because it's a cheap unit that does good damage, or what's the thought behind those?
They have a massive threat range. So the sort of understanding I had with my army, which is I lose to long range damage. So if I put things in my army that can take out my opponent's long range damage, then it's really hard for me to lose, because Scryer Acolytes do that much damage and they can stand behind the screens. Even though they're very weak, you can shoot them off. Like I played an Idenev Deepkin army that had like the, I think, 20 Reavers, something like that. So, and this is just before they kicked the Warpnor out, which I'm still upset about. But I was using Lokchen to send the Warpnor up the board, not Fankor. So like DB said, Vasari Su gets more attacks if he goes first. And then using Gunner Runners to come on and Jezreels to shoot my opponent shooting. So if I can kill my opponent shooting and they can't shoot my Acolytes can bomb everything and pretty much kill it, because I've got screens to hide behind that are strong enough to keep them safe. And they actually have a giant threat range, like 21 inch threat range. And I don't need more warp power to make them good. I can all out defense them. I used to purposely build for like 1950, so I had a Triumph if I needed it. Just super reliable mass damage and actually very high threat range of 21 inches. So I would build my army around them, and probably still would, which is put a bunch of things in my army that, again, doesn't mind going first or second, that will take out my opponent's long range threats. So but then if you come across against 88 Blitzbarb army, there's only so much I can do. They're just gonna shoot me. So,
And what about OBR armies? Do a mainstay always in your OBR lists?
Yeah, well, maybe our list is more based around what I have that is that the models are like using versus what I think a competitive army looks like. But and I do make them a one drop so I can dictate the pace of the game. But using Arcan is probably how I set up around that to use him for which is buffing. Like I have the Mystic Shield something. I take the Nightmare Predator, not the Shrieker, because I think it's really underrated. I think because the Shrieker is so good, is the Nightmare Predator's gone under the radar. Because you can throw it out and do a bunch of mortal wounds without having to come out of your shell. But yeah, I like the Stalkers. A lot of people are focused on the Immortus, but I really like the Stalkers.
Okay. And how are you finding? Have you played many games under the new GHB?
Not yet. So I've got it like right there. I read the rules. I have seen it. I'll probably will play one within the next 2 weeks. I was in Brisbane last week, and so Liam bought his stuff up with him, got a bunch of looks at the airport, which is always nice. But I haven't had the chance to play yet, so.
Is there anything that piques your interest or like sort of you've noticed that might be a little bit sneaky from on your from your end?
Not especially. I mean, obviously Magic 46 mortal wound spell, I think people will be
Yeah.
looking at.
Especially when you've got a chance to use 3d6 already.
Yeah, I always tended to use engineers over the Greyseer just because they had multiple roles. They could buff units for damage as well as cast, and you could reroll casts. But I'm just not really sure. I think it makes the Vermin Lords even worse, even with their dropped in points, because they're terrible casters to begin with. But maybe you can buff them to a point, but I think there'll be a lot of unbinds coming back at them with high dice, even if you make the War Scroll spells a little bit more reliable. I haven't looked into it enough because I've not sought to look at it, but yeah, I think it'll mix it up, which is the whole point. I think the battle tactics as a whole are easier across the board to achieve.
You just said you were sort of obviously hanging up in Brisbane this weekend or like the last few weeks,
Last week, yeah.
last week. Did you bring any armies up with you or did you play any games while you're up here?
I didn't bring it up with me just because of like I have still having to do work around a few things. So, but Liam brought his up, his Daughters of Cain. No, it's Slaanesh, sorry. And he played Corey, and I watched them play. And he played Chris as well. Chris was using OBR, which I'm obviously used to seeing, just to see how the new game planned out. But yeah, so I got to watch a few games like play out in person. I was like also on my laptop at the same time, sort of locking up every now and again. But the thing that I do like better is the battle plans, because the last edition had a couple where some of the if you start relying on the generic battle tactics because your book's got bad ones, some of the scenarios made some of those battle tactics impossible. There's like a couple where cunning maneuver wasn't possible because the objective was like on the edge of your territory and the rest of the board, so it just wasn't possible at all on that map. Or ones where that you needed only one GC can contest this objective, and you get one for having two in the same one. Or like there was a few where the map design and the battle tactic design just made some of the generic ones literally not possible, not unachievable, but you can't actually score it. So I could see, I did check for that. That was one of the first things I looked at, which is, can you actually get all of these if you build for them? Like if I put a Galatian champion in my army and cunning maneuver isn't possible, it doesn't seem like there's anything like that. So hopefully they've learned from that.
Yeah, that's fair. Especially when your book's got bad battle tactics where you've got to rely on them a lot more than other books.
Yeah, so and OBR basically have cunning maneuver twice. So when that wasn't possible, it was you removing two battle tactics, not just one. So
Yeah, that's fair enough. Well, I put that we were going to be recording an episode this week on Twitter, and we've got a few listener questions for you if you don't mind answering them.
we've got two or something, sure.
Yeah. Well, we've got Hayden at least. So Hayden was obviously asking you if you've got a director's cut of the weekend shenanigans. Hayden was the one that got married last week.
Yes, and he didn't get married on a weekend. He got married on a Thursday. So no, I don't. didn't really film much. So unless that's a context to something else, I've got very little to add to that. Unless he's talking about the artist the weekend. No.
Yeah. And then Craig Anderson wants to know whatever happened to Radicus.
Radicus. I don't know if he's referring to, I used to bring like
Oh, that's right. You had a little shoulder right, didn't you?
that was from an EB Games Harry Potter Scabbers, which is
Oh,
like
okay.
still in my wardrobe now. Hasn't seen light in years. Oh, I did bring him out recently for something, but he smells. I guess he's a rat, but
Yeah.
so yeah, I should probably check him out. But no, he's just hiding in my wardrobe. And if I go to an event again, I'll make sure to bring him. I forgot to bring it to Teams, but I also didn't want to like unbag that in the airport. So, which I've had to do before. Yeah, it wasn't fun. You don't feel that cool. Someone like someone pulled out your bag, like, why do you have this? I'm just like, just put it back in the bag.
Little stuffed rat, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Probably get a new one. So,
and then I've got one last one from Corey, who you met last weekend or last week.
I've met him before that,
Yeah. How do you visualize your jiu-jitsu prowess of identifying physical injuries in your opponents, and does that help with identifying their weaknesses in their play?
okay, he's pointing that out because the way he was walking, I asked him if he had an injury to his hip because I could tell something was wrong. And then he told me, at first I thought it just kept it to myself. And then he told me his wife was a physio. I'm like, he's definitely been asked this before. I was like, you injured your left hip. And he was like, yes. And I was like, it's bad, isn't it? It's like, yeah. But no, I don't think that affects gameplay. And the other thing is, whilst I was there, so I predominantly trained judo, which is a grappling sport, but it overlaps a lot with Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And when I was up there before I met up with them, I went to a Brazilian jiu-jitsu gym in Brisbane. So generally when I travel around, I'll always visit a gym and just train with some new people. It's kind of like a culture of the sport. Jiu-jitsu is a lot softer than judo. It doesn't hurt as much. But he was talking about getting involved in it. So I was like, just find a gym. That's like the one that I visited when I was there. I was like, okay, train with those guys. It's simple. Yeah, he said he was thinking about it. But I think he said something like, never throw the punch. You don't throw punches in jiu-jitsu or get kicked out. So,
Don't you just throw people around instead?
yeah, well, that's judo. Jiu-jitsu, you just sort of roll on the floor. So, but yeah, they claim to do that. Yeah, pretty much like an old school judo view on it. But I would never recommend somebody train judo who's more than 30 years old to just do jiu-jitsu. You're not going to cripple yourself.
Yeah,
Like
that's
I have.
fair. Because you're quite a tall person as well, aren't you?
Yeah, but it means it's like even longer to hit the ground. I've
Well, that's
got
the age
further
old
to
saying, what
fall.
the taller you are, the harder you fall.
Yeah, pretty much. But when someone throws you and then you fall far and then they land on top of you, and then so it's your weight plus their weight plus gravity straight into the floor on your ribs. So
Yeah.
like yeah, I've broken them a few times. So
Yeah, that's fair.
do jiu-jitsu, that won't happen to you.
That's, yeah, if you're staying on the ground, you can't get thrown off the ground.
No, I actually remember going to a class. I broke my rib and I knew it, and I'd done it so many times I didn't even bother going to the hospital. And then I went to like a games night with Chris and a few others, and he's like, you should really go to the hospital. And I was like, I could barely breathe, and I was like, there's no point. I know what they're gonna do. I'm a physio myself. I know what I've done. I can feel where it was broken. It's pulled an intercostal between two of my ribs, and just why I was pointing out the way he was walking. But yeah, kind of took a hiatus and a break after that, and now I don't really train as hard. So
Yeah, I bet. I bet.
yeah,
It's not something you want to encounter all the time, is broken ribs.
no, I have done it. It sucks, especially if like you need to sneeze. But no, there's nothing, to go back to the question, that I take from my opponent's posture. Or I mean, I can see that when I'm playing another tall person and the board is low, I'm like, well, we're both going to get lower back pain.
Yeah,
So
I'll commiserate with you.
yeah, or just walking around the board so it's not as far to lean over. But sometimes you're playing in the middle because that's where the objective is. And yeah, if you do like a 2 day event, you've suffered for it. Like by the end of the second day, you're just uncomfortable and in pain. You probably drank the night before. In between the 2 days, like you need like a day to recuperate. But I find I do. I'm not even playing. So, yeah, nothing specific. But if he actually wants to know a jiu-jitsu gym, there's one I'll point out to him. So he can just DM me and I'll tell
Okay,
him.
fair enough. Yeah. And so, what's next for you in terms of gaming or hobby or tournaments and stuff like that? What have you got planned in the books?
I'm gonna finish painting OBR. I think I've got like a magic heavy list to begin with anyway, because I'm taking Arcan. And I'm just going to play a few different games of that, experiment with that. I don't think I'm going to change what I'm doing too much. Like my list didn't go up that as badly as some people's. And I think the point changes as a whole, as they tend to hit multiple units softly, as opposed to like one or two units going up by 80 points. So I'll sticking with that for now, just because I think Skaven are about to get this re-release in AOS 4. So I'm kind of looking at it that I'll play OBR until AOS 4 comes out. And then either be really excited or disappointed, depending if their starter box is Skaven, go back to that. I'm sure I'll play a couple of games with them as well, but like this seemed like a good opportunity to finish that stuff. Because I've painted like maybe 80% of my stuff. So like just like tick me over and finish it. And I'll play the teams event if we can. So I'm with the D3 guys. We're gonna try and get tickets to the teams event. So if we can do that, we will. I'll play that. Whether I'll play anything else, I'm not sure. It's like Bathurst GT. I did get a ticket for that and then sort of had a few things come up, but those things are gone now. So I might travel around with them, and if something happens, maybe. But nothing standing out other than I'm just going to finish painting my Tomb King slash OBR and play some games with them, and then figure out what I'm going to do with them. Like I said, I don't think I've majorly changed what I'm bringing, but I will throw some sort of scavenger together, and I'll get that Pestilence Warband when it gets released. Try and use
I suppose, thinking about the possible re-release, what do you hope to see in a new Skaven book? Do you hope to see sort of
that.
revamped old models, or you want to see a whole brand new range with the old models kicked out?
I kind of want to see what they did with Seraphon because they updated and replaced. So like they had Salamanders and Razordons. They've got this new equivalent to that has two profiles that essentially does both. So I think that's ideal. So also the Aggrodon Riders and the Skink Riders have clearly replaced the old Saurus Knights. So I would like to see them do things like that where they update new versions of old things. So it would be cool to get like they got the Chameleon Skinks came out, they got a different name, but they're clearly Chameleon Skinks. So I would like to see that. Like you've got a couple of new things as well, but for the most part, it's bringing the old stuff up to speed in a just a really detailed way that they've just aesthetically done a great job with that army. So I'd like to see them do something similar with Skaven. So even if they Scry Acolytes, I do want to see that. Jezails, I want to see that. If they had like a box where you can make Jezails and all weapons teams, I think that would be
Yeah,
cool.
that'd be sick. That'd be so cool.
So I think they need that. I would like a couple of new Eshin units. And even if it's just one or two, even if it's one, like just give me Gutter Runners. That's all I want. Even if they're shit. So, yeah, some of the older stuff, I think you're a bit of a mix. Like, do they need, I don't know, could you have Plague Monks with different weapon options to make them into Sons of Bearers off one unit? Like, or two different builds from the same kit? Like, something like that, just to bring them up to date. So, they could throw a couple of new things in there. Like, Seraphon got a couple of new things as well. So, for the most part, I'd like to see them update new versions of old things, but they can go about that however way they see fit.
And if they did come out with a new unit, what would you like to see in a new unit?
I kind of like the old stuff, like a new version of something old. Like I would like to see something else from Mulder, which isn't a Hellfire Abomination, which isn't Stormfiends or Scryer, even though they've got the Mulder keyword. So just to see what they would do with like a new unit of Radagers or like something more updated, because they used to have to kind of fit things into the four different clans. I don't think they necessarily have to do that anymore, and they sort of did that with Stormfiends being a mix of both. I'm not really sure. Surprise me. Like, see what they come out with.
I suppose they have got a wealth of things they can pull from, especially when you've got Mulder in there. You could go any which direction with that.
I'd like to see them cross over a bit more. Like, have something that's like they used to have plague rats, which are like the rat swarms but poisonous. So you could have like a rat ogre. I think they used to even get pestilence rat ogres. You could get an Eshin Rat Ogre in Mordheim. So like having access to different, almost like different marks in Chaos. Like you can
That'd be
build
very cool.
something like Pestilence and Mulder combined, but having some sort of plague rat ogres. Or like even Pestilence Poison and Eshin. So like something like that where they mix them up a bit. I think that could be cool. I think they've got more room to do that now, whilst Fantasy, the lore and the way the army was designed in the different clans very much restricted that. And I think even the first AOS book was very restricted based on clan, and they don't really play that way anymore. So I think they could blur the lines a little bit between clans and having mixed units.
Yeah, that's fair.
They've done that on one of the Vermin Lords, the name on Screech. You can sort of pick a clan to represent and he gets a different ability.
Yes,
I
he
know that the
does.
marks the Sinesh, like Sinesh and Nurgle, all those things. So yeah, play with that a little bit more. Don't make it just like chaos, but blur the lines a bit. They don't have to be completely separate anymore. So they could do some sort of cool mixed rat ogre pestilent thing, I think, just to distinguish them from storm fiends.
Yep, that's fair. Is there anything you wanted to leave, like a tidbit or a word of wisdom with the listeners with?
Yeah.
That makes sense. I'll get there eventually.
Advice. Play something, test it out, play 4 or 5 games and then see how it goes. If that thing only works twice, can you do anything to play it differently? If you've played 4 games now having made that modification and you're still only working 1 or 2 times, it doesn't work. Try something else. So I think a lot of people will maybe try an army for the first time at a tournament. And if you're wanting to do well at a tournament, don't do that. Go to like a couple of games days. Like, I don't care about doing well at a tournament, but I do think it's a common mistake. Like, plan around things, build something, kind of go first or second. If it can't, make sure that your drops align with that. And practice. So again, if you want to test that combination, give it a try a few times, modify it. If it's not working, is it still not working? Take it out. It really is that simple. The only way to do that is by playing. So looking at your positioning, okay, I messed up the positioning. I'll try again. Still hasn't worked. Still hasn't worked. It doesn't work. I'm taking it out. So knowing what to expect from your stuff. Or this is a swingy unit. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. Okay, accept that this is a swingy unit. I can't rely on it to take care of something. If it does, great. Plan for the lowest outcome and then hope for the best outcome. Sometimes you have to do that. Like, I need this unit to overperform to do something. I think you do need synergy, and I think you need to plan. Like I said, my most recent Skaven list is use my long range threats to take out my opponent's long range threats so that I can bring my Skyrock lights up the board and then bomb them. So, and then deploy around that. So I'm looking at where they're putting things. Whether they make me go first or second, I use Jezails. I don't ever use the Warp Lightning Cannon because its threat range is a lot shorter. And so people can deploy around it easier. You can't really deploy around Jezails very easily. And whether it goes first or second matters because I might only hit someone's screen if I go first. And do I want to deploy it right on my deployment lines? No. So, and it even if I do get what I want, is it going to work? Maybe. Like, so I could do 12 model wounds. I can also do them to myself. So, yeah, have a bit of a plan. So I'm like, I've got my screens. I've got my one mass damage unit. What's the biggest threat to that unit I'm trying to protect? And then I build the rest of my army to try and take that out. So, and I've done that through practicing. So I tried it before. I was like, can I actually do it? Can I take out my opponent's long range threats? There's a couple of armies I can't, but for the most part, I can. So, I can play the Stormcast army with long strikes. So I just sort of tried to zone the board as best as I could. I was like, I don't need to do work with this unit until turn 3 or turn 4 if I have to. I just got to the long strikes and then I was like, everything else can fall later. Doesn't matter. Yeah. So, just have a tactic, have an idea of what you want to do and just respond to your opponent. Think about deployment, ask about threat ranges, and practice. Test it out. Don't count on something working that you've never used before.
Yep, that's fair.
That would be my advice.
You've always got to practice things just in general to work out how things work in general. If they're not going to work out, or if it's going to work out.
Yes. And if you have a long range army, don't be a one drop, be as many drops as you possibly can. And then put your missile things and long range weapons, be your last drops. As long as you don't deploy yourself into a hole where you've messed up and blocked it yourself,
Yep.
because people, I've done that too. But,
Especially when you got a lot of small units and a lot of models in those units, you can just
yeah, so
block up your whole deployment.
I've definitely done
Yes,
that.
I've done that multiple times.
Yeah. So, yes, if you have a long range shooting army, be as many drops as you possibly can. I think that's a
Okay.
piece of advice other people don't give. So I'm trying to think of something that's maybe not been said before. So.
And then did you have any shout-outs?
Yeah, I guess Corey. So got to hang out with him last week. And yeah, I actually watched him play and I think he was using his Khorne army, which I thought was really cool to watch because I think they're very good and very capable, but I think they require a lot of thought and precision.
Yes, they do,
And
yep.
I played a game against a Khorne army that's quite similar to his, and it was probably the hardest game I've ever played because like it was just like a strategic tactical back and forth. And points were just neck and neck the whole time. And I liked that he told me when I was chatting to him that he likes that they're a high skill cap. And again, he's put something in his arm. He's talking about what's my first turn battle tactic going to be, and he's put something in there specifically to do that. And it's a unit that retreats in combat, which I love. So just like messing with the turn order. So yeah, I'll give him a shout out. Lean's playing Sinesh, so I'm not giving him a shout
That's fair.
out. Yeah, I guess that's it for now. I guess the D3 model win guys as well, if any of them are listening to this. I doubt they are, but if they are, then I'll give you guys a shout out.
They'll have to now.
Maybe they will, maybe they but they can talk to me whenever they want, so they probably don't
Yep.
need a point. But,
Fair enough. Well, thanks for making time to coming on the show, Dan. I do
yeah.
greatly appreciate it.
Oh, good, mate. My pleasure.
I've always enjoyed like your insights. I remember watching some of your videos. I think you were doing them with Coach for a little bit. Just little snippets of like tips. Was it yourself or was it with some, I think it might have been.
I did it for a few different people, but yeah, I think even if you look, I think those things don't work anymore. So maybe I should
No,
make
they
some new ones.
don't.
So having some things still retreat and charge stuff. So I might give that another try out and see if I can still make that work. So I can take 60 clone rats instead of 40. So maybe I'll just give that a run. So if someone can kill 60 of them, then go ahead, be my guest. So.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, enjoy the rest of your night, Dan. Thanks
Yeah.
again for coming on.
Oh, good. Thanks very much.
Thank you for listening to Unidentified Wargamer. You can find links for the guests located in the description below. You can find the show on Twitter at @u_wargamer, and I will see you next week.